Good morning, Southern Arizona, and the rest of you out there in cyberspace. Welcome to the Simmons Car Care Show. I'm Jerry Simmons, your host. Along with me this morning is Mr. Jim Mooney from Frontier Towing for all of your towing needs. You're listening live, 1490 AM, 94.9 HD4 FM, ESPNTucson.com. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning, everybody out there in cyberspace. Thanks for listening. Remember, it is a live call-in talk show, 520-719-1490, 520-719-1490, or you can listen to us on ESPN.com on the podcast. You can listen to us live, or you can go back and listen to us later if you want. If you think you missed something, you go back and listen to us later. That's always a fun one. So remember, folks, it's Saturday morning. You know, I would like a critique. Somebody goes back and listens. Send me a critique, so tell me what I'm doing wrong or what I'm doing right. That'd be good to know. Remember, folks, it's Saturday. All right, we're back again for another fun-filled week. It's Super Safe Saturday. Start off the week here with move over or slow down if you see a car with flashing lights on. That's the rule, folks. It's the law, and it's law in most every state. If you see a car with flashing lights, that just doesn't mean law enforcement or fire. That means mom's grocery getter. She's on the side of the road. You are required to move over and give a work area for that person. That includes the guys with the barricades, too. You know, those guys with barricades, they're standing right there on the side of the road. You go flying by them. It don't seem fast when you're in the car, but when you're on the side of the road, it seems really fast. But actually, it's really fast. So move over and slow down. And always, no drinking and driving, no texting and driving. I know we are in the middle of March Madness, so everybody's out watching the U of A at their local watering hole. So no drinking and driving. Uber or phone a friend or get a designated driver or call a tow truck if you – you can't make it home, call a tow truck to get you and your car home. You can sleep it off. When you get up in the morning, you can have your car at home. It's always kind of an interesting concept.
It's cheaper than a DUI, too.
Way cheaper than a DUI. It's cheaper than the DUI you're ever going to. The cheapest money you'll ever spend calling somebody else to get you home. Trust me, folks, I've seen it but I've seen it a lot of times, and it's the cheapest money you'll ever spend. You'll thank yourself over and over. And you know what? Everybody in your family will thank you, too, so just do it. And watch out for the bicycles and dog walkers out there when you're driving today. You know, we're getting some really nice weather right now in Tucson, Arizona. It's a great time for people out there bicycling. Great time for the motorcycle guys who just didn't want a little too cold of weather, but now they're getting out in the morning and they're going on their rides. Watch out for those motorcycle guys. You know, sometimes they're hard to see. Sometimes, you know, you can't see them even though they flash their lights, whatever. It's blind spots are exactly that, blind spots. And just make sure you watch out for them. So do everything you can to make sure because the last thing you want to have is a collision. And for the motorcycle guys out there riding around, I don't know who thought it's a good idea to go riding up between a line of cars at a stoplight. I don't know why that's a rule or why how that got to be. It's a stupid idea, folks. I'm just telling you that's a dumb idea. A lot of people can get wound upside down because they drove up the side of the middle of the intersection so they could save 14 seconds. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about 14 seconds that you might save. So, you know, it may be okay, but, you know, maybe you shouldn't do it.
It's legal.
Just saying.
It's legal.
It's legal. I don't know who came up with this rule. I don't know why somebody thought driving down the middle of a row of cars was a good idea. Somebody obviously knew something more than me. If somebody wants to call me up and tell me why that's a great idea and why I'm wrong, knock yourself out. Been to a bunch of crashes where you know, somebody doesn't see you, and they try to turn, and boom. And a car against a motorcycle, folks, car's going to win every single time. I don't care how big you think that bike is and how tough you think you are, car's going to win. Works just like a car and a bicycle, car's going to win. Those are not battles that you need to be taking on. Those are not fights that you need to get in the middle of. It's a simple thing. Just don't do it. But you know, we're going to do it anyway. So just try and just don't. And let's don't say we did. How about that? Let's do it and say we did.
Jim, we got one thing at a time that we need to do. One, they need to turn the lights on the cars. We haven't got that whipped yet. We haven't got turn signals on a car. We haven't got that whipped yet. And now you want these people to quit driving in between cars when they're parked.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I just asked for so much. I'm just asking for the world out there.
Yeah, I know.
You're right,
I mean,
Jerry.
You're just so demanding.
And
don't hit me.
Right. And don't hit me. Don't run into me. Don't drink and drive. Don't text and drive. I am just full of demands today, folks. But you know what? The world's a demanding place. It's a demanding place, and there's demands upon you every single day. So I'm going to demand this stuff of you too. How about that? This is a demanding place, and you know, unless somebody wants to call
Jim,
me up and tell me how I'm wrong, I'm right today. So
my brother is in. I'm gonna get in my truck and drive toward the airport at 7 o'clock. So you'll be handling the 7 o'clock hour, and because my phone, I haven't done this before with this headset, so it may or may not work. So I'm depending on you for that. But my brother from Tennessee, first time he's been out here for 15 years, and we have been running around Tucson. I mean, we went to all the hot spots, and boy, if you haven't been to the Reed Park Zoo lately, people, you need to go down and see that place. That place is incredible. Desert Museum. If you go to the Desert Museum, go early in the morning, as early as they open up, so that you can see the animals, because during the day it wasn't that hot. And they kind of evaporated, and they go back in, and you can't hardly see them. But beautiful, beautiful scenery out there in the desert. I mean, I had forgotten how nice this place looks. I have never seen so much traffic on the road. Tucson is getting, it reminds me of L.A. I used to live in San Jose, California in the military. And that's what this reminds me of, is San Jose. And it's just incredible. Turn signals, that's what you're going to say. Just take the turn signals out. Take a hammer, knock your headlights out, lighten a load on the car. Maybe you get better fuel economy, because after all, gas is only up about 50 cents a gallon in the last month. And you can save some money. Driving in last night, went to meet my family for my Wade, who's he's part owner of Simmons 4x4, and Denise over there, met him, and going back to the house, and I'm watching cars at, it's about 7:30, you know, that's dark, and cars would come in. And remember me telling you, your eyes focus on the car that's behind him and the car that's in front of him, if there is one in front of him. And you can't even see that car because he doesn't have his lights on. Your eyes are already adjusted to the bright lights of the other cars. It was like a joke, you know. And I'm going, don't the people realize that their lights are not on? You know, you talking about distracted driving. How about driving with your head up, your hind end? I mean, you can't see anything. It's kind of like an ostrich sticking his head in the sand. That is dangerous. It is just dangerous. My brother was riding with me, and he said, yeah, they are kind of hot. I said, look at that. He said, look at what? I said, those cars. He said, what about them? I said, can you see the second one back? He goes, oh, there he is. I said, that's what I'm talking about. You know, you only got less than a millisecond to make a decision. If he decides to move out because he thinks his lights are on or turn in front of him, it's hard to see him. But please turn your lights on, you know, and use your turn signal. If not, just go ahead and take a hammer, knock your headlights out, and take a hacksaw and cut that little arm off of the side of that steering column over there. It's on the left-hand side, by the way. And, you know, it's funny, but you buy a car, and they're required to have these. These are safety issues. So you got headlights on. You make sure when you're driving in Tucson that you dim your headlights. And most of the cars now, the bigger cars, and Cadillacs, Chevrolets, just about everything, has an automatic dimmer switch, automatic lights. You just put it on automatic and just leave it. Okay? Well, in the daylight, when your daylight running lights come on, the headlights come on, your tail lights do not come on. That's not part of the plan. So if you want 100% coverage, turn your taillights on and let people know that, yes, I am driving in front of you. And if you're a senior citizen, I am driving slower than you probably because my reaction time is not quick enough. And if I blow a tire, I don't want to run over somebody on the side of the road. And another little thing that you need, you know that move over to the left? Have you ever seen a hubcap come off of a car? And then there's always a guy that says, oh, there are no more hubcaps on cars. Yes, there are. Just start looking. You'll find them. But those old hubcaps used to come off the car. You'd be running 50 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden here, this hubcap would take off in front of you. And what happens when they go over and there's a bicycle in the outside lane or somebody changing a tire on the side of the road, and you're running right there with them, and here comes this razor blade at about 75 miles an hour because it picks up speed and runs away from a car and comes out. This is why we move over. And if somebody stumbles while they're working on the side of the car and falls out in the road, are you going to be able to miss them? You know, I was driving down Old Spanish Trail this past week. And a week and a half ago, there was a bicycle, and he was riding with his buddy. His buddy was riding in the bike lane, and he was riding in my lane. And I'm going, okay. And that Spanish Trail, and that lane, not that wide. He's still kind of close out there. And, you know, and I drove right by him. I did have a break where I could cross the double line and get on the other side of the road and dodge him. But I'm going, you know, everybody needs to pay attention if everybody's going to be safe. And all we can do is just bring it up because Jim owns Frontier Towing, and Jim spends his life getting people out of jams and towing and seeing the carnage that these cars create out on the freeways and out on the roads. And right now, the last I heard, the deaths in the cars are going up from automobile crashes, mainly because people decide, oh, that seatbelt is uncomfortable. It may wrinkle my shirt. It may wrinkle my tie. Therefore, I'm not going to wear the thing. So that when you hit it, you're like a ping pong ball inside of a little ping pong machine. You just bounce all over the place. And don't give me that crap that you can hang on to them. I've driven race cars. You do not hang on. If you watch NASCAR, when they get in a crash, they take their hands off, put it up across their chest to stay away from that steering wheel. That thing has enough power to throw you out the door on the opposite side. If you crash and hit just right, the shock will throw you out. So that's where you wear seatbelts. But just a suggestion, you know, you don't. It's really a law, but so is texting. We do that. So if you text and drive and it's okay, then it must be okay to ride without your seatbelts. People, you need to have a checkup from a neck up. You will die. You can die. The steering wheels used to be, and still are probably, the softest material in a vehicle. The reason they're the softest material is because back in the old days, that steering wheel used to kill a lot of people until they figured it out. And if you're riding down the road 50 miles an hour and you hit a bridge above it or something like that, you project forward, and when you go forward, you hit the steering column and stuff, and then you go back to the seat, and then you go forward again. Remember that ping pong ball? That's exactly what it does. Riding a race car with a 5-point harness in it, where you're strapped in like, you know, you're going to the outer space, you still have movement. I've crashed with a 5-point harness on, a helmet on, and everything you can have. And boy, I'm telling you, next day you get up, you're bruised where the harness was. Your shoulders are just miserably sore. Your lower back is sore where you actually, the shock of these things. And and you don't have 5-point halters, and you don't have roll bars, and you don't have one of these the $300 helmets on your head, and yet you're still driving. Well, I'm not going to use a seatbelt. You know, that's like, I mean, tires. You look at your tires. How many of you drive with tires that are expired on the date, the code date, DOT, on the side of the tire, and you're driving down the road, the thing is about 9 years old, and you say, wow, this is just really cool. You know, I'm having a good time. And I'm glad you get out and drive, because I found it very enjoyable. Me and my brother run around to every place we could cover in 7 days and had a ball just looking at stuff, amazed at the amount of construction and potholes. Oh, my Lord, potholes. You hit a pot, there's potholes out there big enough to bury my diesel in, I swear. But you can... It's,
you know, you're right, Jerry. They're bad. You know, I was going to tell you. You're talking about the tires and the DOT numbers. I ran across a guy the other day, and he had a 2017 vehicle, and the tires were original equipment. So the tires from the date code on them was I think it was like 23 of 17. All right, so that's like the first quarter of 2017. So, you know, 7-year-old tires, right? And the tread on them wasn't horrible, but the tires showed signs of obvious wear. There were cracks. I mean, good Lord, there were cracks all on the side of the tires. You could see that they were evident without even looking. You could see the cracks in the tires. And I was looking
at them. That's bad.
Hey, bro, you probably should get some tires. I mean, these tires are in pretty bad condition. Well, they came with the vehicle. They're original equipment. I'm like, well, okay. That's, you know, good for you. That's a great thing. But, you know, probably now is the time to replace those tires. And it was almost like this. Well, and this was almost the attitude. I was just kind of taken back. It was, well, I'm going to keep those as long as I can. What do you mean? Well, yeah, it's like a challenge. Like I'm going to keep those tires for as long as I can. So every year I get out of them, it's just another, you know, like I win. And I was sitting there looking at them, going, well, but they're wore out. No, the tread's still good. I said, yeah, I'm aware that the tread is not horrible on the tires. They're getting down. They're probably had. You know, they probably had 30% of their tread life left. They should have been replaced. They were getting to the point where they needed to be replaced on just the wear component, but the tires themselves were bad condition. And I was like, so wait, so you're going to tell me that you think it's like a game, like it's a challenge that you're going to keep these for as long as you possibly can? Yeah, I want to keep these. I want to keep these on the vehicle. And I was like,
wow.
So what are you going to do when one of them blows out? Oh, they're not going to. Oh, okay. Because you have a crystal ball and you can see that these things are never going to fail. And, I, you know, so now it became – now I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. So do you keep the same oil in the car? Well, what do you mean? Well, I mean that you're obviously intent on keeping the car as original as possible. Okay, you want to keep the paint original, you want to keep the wheels original, you want to keep the tires original. Do you keep the original oil? Well, no, I don't do that. I changed my oil. Why? Well, why do you change your oil? Well, because it needs to be changed. I'm confused. You want to keep this thing as an original vehicle, right? I mean, you didn't park it. You should have parked it and put it in a museum if you wanted to keep it original, right? Put it up on stands and put velvet ropes around it. No, I use it every day, and I change the oil, and, you know, I put gas in it, obviously, and you know, the thing wasn't dirty. I wash it off. Okay, so why are you so opposed to changing tires if you change oil? Well, the tires aren't as critical. Oh, grasshopper. Grasshopper, why? You
said, oh, my Lord.
Why? Yeah. So, grasshopper, tell me why it isn't so important. Well, if I don't change the oil, then you know I could seize up my engine. Well, you know what? Excellent point. You're right. If you don't, you know, maybe the vehicle could burn a little could burn a little oil. You know, if you don't put more in it, it could go out and you could lose oil pressure and seize up the motor. You know, maybe just the dirty oil itself being ran for 60,000 miles, you know, which just completely wore out and completely junk, right? So that could cause engine damage or a significant engine wear by not changing your oil because it's just dirty, you know. It's like mopping a floor with dirty water, folks. If you ever mop the floor with dirty water, you know what you get at the end of the day? A dirty floor. So you got to change that stuff. So I was like, okay, so you concede the fact that you need to change the oil to keep the engine going. What about, like, the coolant? Do you change the coolant? I've changed it once. Okay, so in, you know, we're talking 17 to 24. We're talking 6 years. So you changed it once. Well, all right, maybe you got it every 3 years. Okay, not great, but, you know, okay. Better than never changing it, right? Never. Well, you know, I'm not saying it's a lifetime cooling system, and I just keep running it because it's original equipment. How about the belt, sir? Have you ever looked at the belt? Oh, yeah. It's getting worn. I was thinking about changing it. Oh, wait. The belt is worn and you were going to change it. Why you're thinking about changing it? Okay, so walk me through the process here. Tell me what you think is the scenario. Well, the belt, I can see there's a bunch of cracks in the belt. Wait. What did you say? You can see a bunch of cracks in the belt. And what does that mean? Well, I see these cracks in the belt and, you know, the belt might break. So is the belt rubber? Yeah. So are the tires rubber? Yeah. So the cracks in the tire aren't the same as the cracks in the belt? No, they're different. And I'm sitting there going, how can you possibly think that the tire and the belt constructed of similar materials with wear patterns similar, you know, both go around in a circle, right? The belt goes around pulleys.
Sure.
Has effectively the same program, right? The tires go around in a circle holding the car up. And his argument was, well, the belt goes around spins a lot more time, so there's more revolutions on the belt than there are on the tires. Okay, I'll give you that. You know, the thing, engine turns 1,500, 2,000 RPMs, you know, it spins a lot, you know. But the belt's designed to run at that level, right? My argument was, well, the belt runs at a level where its operating environment is 2,000 RPMs or 1,500 RPMs for 2 years, and then it's wore out. Tires have life expectancy is, you know, generally speaking, 30,000, 40,000. You know, if you're doing everything right, maybe 60,000 miles. And pop through potholes, you know, that's their environment. So if you're trying to compare the two, let's look at the fact that you think the cracks in the belt are bad, but the cracks in the tires aren't bad. So my next question was, so if the tire fails, because it's going to fail, I mean, it's a predetermined fact. I'm not a fortune teller, but I know that tires will eventually fail. It's a proven fact. Everybody on the planet will tell you that the tires eventually wear out and they fail. I don't care how long you think you can keep them, they'll eventually fail. So when this tire fails, if the belt fails, what happens? My car shuts off. The car shuts off and the alternator quits working and the oil pumps or the water pump stops working. So maybe I don't have any power steering and I roll over to the stop and I have to, you know, go get a belt or get a tow truck. Okay. So what happens if the tire fails? Well, it just goes flat. Oh, really? Have you recently seen an old tire that has failed? Have you ever seen a belt separation? No, I've never seen one of those. Oh, well, when the fenders ripped off the side of the truck, call me, and then we'll discuss about, you know, how tire failure does significant damage to body components. So we're talking about sheet metal. We're talking about inner fender wells. We're talking about ABS wires. We're talking about brake lines. We're talking about every suspension component on the front. It would be you know, tie rod ends, and on the rear it'd be trailing arms and or brake lines and or whatever else is back there. So when that tire comes apart and it wraps around the spindle, it causes a lot of damage. It rips stuff to shreds. Not to mention that now the tire, the wheel is on the ground. Okay, so, and folks, wheels for tires, vehicle wheels, are not made to drive on asphalt or dirt without a tire. I know that it looks like it'll be okay, and I know you see the guys driving down the roads with the sparks flying out. Trust me, folks, I have done it. I have run vehicles till the tires blew off and the wheel forged around the spindle to where the tire would no longer roll. And I want to tell you something. I did it one day. We were out in the middle of nowhere recovering vehicles, and the tire went flat, and the wheel went smashed down. And I'm going to tell you, it took that wheel, like Jerry said, you know, about the seatbelt, it took that steering wheel and just yanked it out of my hand. I mean, you couldn't be holding it with a 10-ton truck. It pulled so hard. It'll flip you around in a circle like nobody's business. When you run wheels on the ground, they only last so long, and you can only do so much. If the car is sitting on the ground and the tire's not, the wheel's not, you're in better shape. But when that wheel stops rotating, you get ready, because that steering wheel's coming out of your hand, and you're going to go for a ride. You're going to go whichever direction the wheel's on. You're going to go to the right or the left, and you're going to do start spinning, and there ain't no way around it. So back to the tire situation, when you roll your steel wheels and your aluminum wheels on the ground, it causes damage to them. The tire guy, first guy will tell you, well, we can't install a new tire because the rim has been damaged, okay, and it will the tire will no longer properly seat. It won't hold air. The tire's out of round. We can't do anything with it. A wheel replacement, a rim replacement is required. It happens. I've seen it, told him a million times. You can call a tire guy. Call any tire guy you want. Ask him, hey, if I roll my rim on the ground, what do I got to do? Buy a new one. Just buy a new one, because this other one you have is no good. It's not even good for a spare. Why? Because you're going to put it into the car thinking it's okay, and then what happens? It goes flat because it won't hold air because the rim is damaged. Okay. So the amount of damage that occurs with a tire going south for the winter is catastrophic. And guys like from you know, Javier from Spectrum, they can show you all. But at a minimum, you're going to have black marks on your fender. They can show you all kinds of photos of wheel, tire, and rim damage that caused the vehicle. So now, back to our scenario of the guy with the tires. So his thought process was it was better to run the tires and take the chance that the tires weren't going to go flat and leave him stranded, that he had a good spare, because didn't see it. But I'm going to guess that the spare tire was exactly the same age as the tires on the car. But why, if he didn't change the ones that are rolling on the ground, why would you? You certainly wouldn't change the spare tire, right? It's brand new. It's never.
That's right.
It's under the car. And odds are, yeah. What else? It's more than likely flat. Why? Tires go flat. They leak air. It's just they permeate air through the rubber. It's just the way it happens. You know, it's just the mechanics of the car. That's why they require maintenance. I know it's an evil word out there. You know, and it's not a prevent the maintenance program. It's a preventative maintenance program. So you got to go out. Don't think about preventing maintenance. You got to think about how to prevent other issues from occurring. So you want to do preventative maintenance so you don't have issues. So anyway, so we're having this conversation. I be honest with you folks, I'm sure I did not convince this person that they needed new tires. They were dead set sure that their tires were good. So because, you know, their tires still had tread, and it was like a game to keep them on the vehicle until such point in time that, you know, they failed. Okay, whenever that's going to happen. Now, how does that affect us? Well, that guy's driving down the road. He's not bothering me because his tires aren't going to bother me whatsoever. Until he's driving down the road, and he's driving down 22nd Street, let's say, or driving down Broadway or Speedway. He's doing 35 miles an hour, right? It's not a big deal. You know, he's just going. He's not on the freeway. He's in the middle of town, and all of a sudden, pop! tire goes out. You know where he's going? You know where he's going to go to? He's going to go right into you. Why? Because the car is going to pull, and it's going to smash right into the side of your car. Oh, well, how is that my fault? How did I get wrapped up into this guy's lack of maintenance? How did I get wrapped up into his lack of maintenance? How did they cause my issues? Because, folks, that's the way it is. That guy, you're relying on that guy to do the work that he's supposed to do on his vehicle so that your people are safe as well. So when you think you're out there riding around, oh, I can get by without doing this, remember, it's not just you in the car. It's everybody around you. We're all in this together. We all drive on the road together. And when you crash into somebody, you got a whole other set of parameters that you get to go through. Now we're talking about insurance and crash and lawyers and lawsuits and you know, all the things that could be avoided by simply changing your tire. I know that sounds crazy, and I know that sounds like, oh, it will never happen to me. But, Jerry, how many times has it never happened to me happened to you? I know it happened to me, but, you know.
I've never had a flat tire. The way I look at it, if I wanted cracks in a tire, I would have ordered them with cracks in a tire. When you get those cracks in a tire, think about it. You're driving down I-10 out here. Our speed limit through Tucson, 65 mile an hour, plus about 15, depending on who you are. And you go out. And then all of a sudden, Jim brought an excellent point. And I've said it over and over and over. Have you ever get a tailgater that follows you real close? I mean, you're running the speed limit and about 3 or 4 mile an hour over the speed limit, and you can't get away from this guy. You know that your brakes are absolutely flawless and they're going to work every time because you have regular maintenance and checkups on that brake. That's a safety system. What about the guy behind you? Is his brakes that good? He's only about 5 seconds behind, not 5 seconds, 5 feet behind you. Can't even see his hood. Those people worry me. And I have been on the road coming back from L.A. when a old Plymouth, well, at that time, you know, every few years ago, a Plymouth come by me, and I'm always watching the tires on the right front. I'm in the right-hand lane. I'm in the lane, out of the way. Here comes this car around. Not really running excessive, maybe 5-10 mile an hour faster than I'm running. And he gets right beside me, and I see the right front tire blow out. I'm on binders. I'm on my brakes. I've got that thing locked up. Now I know why there's skid marks in the middle of the freeways. I had that thing locked down. If that guy had had another layer of chrome on his bumper, I would have hit him when he come over and spun him and probably turned him over. But that, and that's with me looking. That's with me watching. So when you see these cars going down the road and they're just a flying along, boy, they got the best thing in the world. Have you ever hit a hay hook laying in the middle of the darn freeway? I did with an inside dually, towing a horse trailer with four horses in it. That is a pain in the butt. But it was how many people have even know what a hay hook is? Well, when you see one sticking out of the sidewall of an inside dually, which is to the roadside inside dually, the one out there where you just get all the vehicles coming by, that is a real pleasure to do that. How about a pair of scissors? My tire on my one-ton truck, single wheel, it had a flat. I went to say, what's the deal with this? There was a scissor, half of a scissors, sticking through the sidewall on my tire. Where did I get a pair of scissors? You got to be kidding me. And it was about a 5-inch blade sticking up through. Now, either somebody planted it in the road or something, but how did I wind up with that? I have no idea. But if you don't think it can happen, think again. When you're driving, just remember, driving is a full time. My brother-in-law had a flat on the Suburban on the left front. and he was going out to Corona Day Tucson. It pulled him from the right lane across the left lane, which are, thank goodness, there was no traffic. There wasn't anything he could do. He went across the left lane and went out into the desert. It was that quick, and it was not speeding. The tire blew, wrapped around his suspension, and pulled him to the left, and there was nothing he could do. Big old boy, good driver, safe driver, takes care of his vehicles and stuff, and that tire just blew out. So, you know, it can happen. And people who drive shocks, how about shocks and struts? And people go out and they say, okay, yeah, I'm gonna replace the shocks and struts on the car. I've got about 70,000 miles on them. They ride, you know, you don't really notice. They go out so easy, so slow that you get used to the ride as the duck and diving, as I call it, because it's so minimal and it gradually gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. Where you're really going to notice it is when you're running down the road about 70 miles an hour. Somebody in front blows a tire, and all of a sudden they're all over the place, and you get on the binders, and your suspension. Have you ever had a pothole, the same pothole, with both front tires at the same time? The answer to that is no, because the potholes are pretty good size. You can hit a speed bump. Speed bumps, now they're little boogers too if you got one of these low swinging cars because you're going to scrub the bottom. But you have to get back to the pothole. And people will go in and they'll say, okay, I got a ruptured shock on the right front. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to get, now remember about the hitting the same pothole at the same time with both tires. In other words, the only way you're going to do that if both tires are side by side and it's like a dually on the back end of a truck, then you can hit that pothole with both tires at the same time. Otherwise, it ain't going to happen. But when you think about it, you got independent suspension up front. You got two shocks on the older cars, and you got two struts on the newer cars. And the right front hits a pothole. Okay, so you rupture a shock, go out and say, okay, while I'm here, I'll just get two struts on this. Well, you buy two struts. What about the rear? Did you know that the rear tires follows the front tires? When you hit that pothole with that right front, you probably hit it with a right rear.
Oh, they do.
And so you go in, but no, you're not going to do that. When you buy shocks for the front, shocks for the rear, just remember, whatever the right front tire normally hits, the right rear tire hits. Oh, and by the way, if you hit something with a left front, the left rear probably hits. So when you're looking and going out and you're shopping, one's got struts on it, one's got shocks on it. Some of them got four struts all the way around it. You've got expensive shocks, you've got cheap shocks. You've got expensive struts, you've got cheap struts. But at about 60,000 miles, you need to be looking at your shocks and your struts. When you take them in, just bite the bullet. Now, shocks have different styles, different weights, different shanks in the stocks in the shocks. You've got gas shocks. You've got, and people say gas shocks. Oh yeah, gas shock. Gas shocks is designed. The gas is designed to cool the hydraulics inside the shock, okay? If you've got a leak, you've got a hydraulic leak, then you've got a shock that's leaking, okay? It's time to get it replaced. You know, you don't have to panic. Just get the darn thing replaced, especially if you're around 60,000 miles. If you want to do preventive maintenance, like Parker Automotive recommends, a little bit all time, you can watch the papers. When Merle's has a sale on shocks, and there always seems to be a sale on shocks or struts. Buy two, get one free. Buy three, get one free. You know, stuff like that. So watch those because they're not inexpensive anymore. They have a heavy-duty shock. They have a medium-range shock. and then have a light duty shock. Light duty shock is something that weighs about 2,000 pounds. My Mustang, I've got medium duty shocks on it because, one, I'm just a chicken, and I figure I might have to hit the brakes at 55 mile an hour, and I don't want it dancing. I don't want it dancing in the middle of the road. I want it to stop as straight as possible. When you go to buy shocks, you start looking. You've got a car that's got 75,000 miles on it. You need to be looking at shocks. You got a truck. It's got a coil spring suspension up front. It's got 100,000 miles on it. It's got a diesel motor sitting in the front of it. You're going to need springs at 100,000 miles. Just go ahead, get a brand new set of springs in the front end, because what you won't see that we see when we put these alignment equipment on this vehicle is the ride height. I attended a seminar years ago on front ends, and they were talking the most common thing missed on the front end when they're putting tires on it, front end alignments and stuff, is the actual ride height. And then you put a set of tires on this thing, and they go out a little premature, and you think, oh, well, I had alignment off on it. No. The coil springs, I bought a motorhome. The coil springs on that motorhome had collapsed an inch and a half, and it only had 40,000 miles on it and a V10 Ford motor in it. Shouldn't have been that. It was an F450 chassis. And I'm going, wow, wow, wow. But it's a coil spring. It's spring steel. If you leave that spring steel setting with a 1,100-pound motor sitting on it or a 700-pound motor, and it just sets all time without getting a chance to stretch back out or hold its own integrity, it will collapse. And you just sit there and scratch your head. You got 100 miles on, you got 100,000 miles on a diesel, change your front springs. You got 100,000 miles, you got a working truck, change your front springs on it. And take a look, have whoever's doing it, look at the rear springs. You have leaf springs, some of them's got coil springs in the rear. My diesel is one of those coil spring boogers, and all the way around. And when you get them, yeah, they're not inexpensive to change out, but it'll change the way your vehicle sits. It'll change the way the vehicle rides. It'll change the duck and dive, as I call it, on an emergency stop. You know, that's the one where you go to the right a little bit, then you start going to the left. And I'm sure Jim's old enough where he's seen that on his own vehicles. In big trucks, like tow trucks, motorhomes, I've seen suspension components that they put on there in case you blow a tire. It's going to keep that motorhome going straight. I have seen it. I've seen them on it. I've looked at them myself. And in fact, I had one on a motorhome. And, you know, but it's to keep the steering wheel from jerking out of your hand and keeping you laying that big boy over in a freeway and have to call Frontier Towing to get it picked up and taken out. So everything on a car has a wear pattern. Shocks,
it's interesting.
Struts, belts.
It's interesting you talk about the springs, Jerry. You know, you can't look at one and tell if it's wore out. You can look at one and see if it's cracked or it's broken. And if you have a broken leaf in a truck, you know, like a Ford or Chevy 1-ton, it's got leaf springs on it, or a cargo van, and you can see it's broken, it's time that you're changing them. Not just the one, I know. I can just pull it apart and put the one in that's broken. You have to ask yourself, why did it break? So you're buying a spring pack. I helped a gentleman one time who had a 1-ton cargo van, and he ran it loaded almost its entire life. You know, he loaded it up, and he never unloaded it. He went around, he did shows, and he went around, and he never unloaded it. And he was complaining that you know, one, he was looking at the stars, and two, that it didn't drive very well at all. It just didn't drive very well. And you know, and I looked at the springs, and I said, well, your springs are look worn out. They just look like they're, you know, they're flat. They don't have more arch to them. They just look flat. No, they're fine. They're fine. Well, eventually, one of the leaves broke, right? When it wasn't the first one, wasn't the main leaf. It was like the second or the third. Okay, so took them off. Now, it's not a horrible job to do. It takes a little bit of work. You have to jack it up and pull the axle down and put the new leaves in. It raised it 3.5 inches by putting just replacing the factory springs with factory springs. And the comment was, wow, I had no idea that it was that they were so bad. Exactly. That's exactly my point. And, you know, Jerry, you made an excellent observation about the alignment and the ride height. So critical. The ride height adjusts. Every steering angle on the vehicle is predicated on proper ride height. Every angle. The turn inclination angle, the toe in, the toe out, the camber, the caster, with the exception of the included angle, all the angles, all the geometry that goes in a car is predicated on what is the ride height, because the ride height determines the position of the control arms. And if the control arms aren't sitting in the right position, all the geometry is wrong. It's no different than having a bad battery in a car that gives you a false voltage to a sensor and the sensor returning a poor signal. It's exactly the same. It has exactly the same effect. You put garbage in, you get garbage out. The car doesn't ride. I took it in, I had it aligned, and it still doesn't drive very good. Well, you know what? It's because the ride height is wrong, or something. The geometry in the suspension is wrong. Car manufacturers send that stuff out, and when they send it out, they know exactly what it looks like. And to that point, when your car has been compromised because, you know, John Doe didn't change his tires and he crashed into the side of you, the body shop guy, and we do this all the time, we take cars from body shops to repair shops to have alignment that work done. Because, so it's like, put on Jerry's system, you're going to put it up on a computerized system and check every single angle, including the ride height and the frame straightness. Now, the guy at the body shop knows what it should be, and he got all the dimensions. But when Jerry goes to check the alignment, he can come back to Javier and say, Javier, here's the problem. It won't align, and here's what we see is wrong. Back to the body shop it goes. More work done. Back to the alignment shop. Okay, now we got it right. Folks, we do it every single day. Vehicles in repairs have to be shipped out from one shop to another so a specialist can perform the specialized procedure. Because the body shop guy may not have Jerry's alignment machine. Why? Because he doesn't align cars. He does body work. He does body and frame work. He doesn't know what Jerry's guys know about alignments and suspension. He knows pretty good. I'm not saying he's dumb. I'm just saying that he has to send it out to get that work done because he didn't want to spend the $50,000 on the alignment rack when he only needs it once. He sends it to Jerry.
The problem with that alignment stuff on it is, you know, you try to get one big piece of equipment, but you've got to have room for the piece of equipment, which is huge. It's almost 20-some feet long. And then it's like 8, 9, 10, almost 10 foot wide. And you've got to have space for that. It needs to be under a roof or something to keep the direct sunlight off of it so the thing will last a while. But you've got to have access. So not only do you have to have the alignment rack, you need a pretty good sized building. I mean, like Brian's got his, and you open the door and you push it out. We've got ours, and we have to open a big gate on the backside when we get access to it. But we're in and out. Parker's, he's got his inside over on 5101 Speedway. He's got one in there. And he said, he's got it angled in so he can get access to it. And it's another one of these electronic boogers that tells you everything wrong with it. And they're extremely expensive. And if you like a body shop, I've been to Javier's body shop, and I've seen these other body shops around town. They're big. They have a. But when you go to take a car apart, you better have some space when you start pulling fenders, and then you've got a frame machine in there so you can pull it back. And when I first had my first alignment equipment, I paid for that alignment equipment by putting cars on that fancy piece that I had and measuring things. And the number one thing that we look at when people pull a unibody car back out, it has to meet certain specifications. It can't just be, you know, cosmetic, oh, I'll pull this out, you know, put it in, because you've got the crush spaces in them that are no longer safe. They no longer fold the engine away and stuff like that. We used to find those things when a body shop would fix them, when the unibodies first come out. And then somebody would be going, and they'd not get it completely pulled. They'd send it over. We would measure it, send them a copy back to them. As Jim said, they'd go back and forth. And then they'd go back to work on it and put that thing back in, because you have they have collapsible points in that points in the car, and it's safety. It keeps the engine compartment out of your face. And if those things aren't put back and pulled back and fixed proper, that thing, the next time you hit something, it ain't going to do anything but just let you fully take everything right in the face. Voila, here comes the lawsuit. It's horrible. So, yeah. But when you're driving that thing and you do the tires, you do due diligence. And when you know, when Scott said last week, do a little bit of maintenance all the time, a little bit of maintenance, and it won't cost you an arm and a leg. Well, what happens if you don't do a little bit of maintenance all the time? When you get in there, you're going to have anywhere from a $2,000 to a $5,000, you know. They're dropping them off at Brian's place now, and they're saying, just fix it up. And Brian will do an estimate and call him and say, are you sure you want to do this? I want to do it. I'm planning on keeping that vehicle. I'm not paying $45,000 for a new one. And you can look, and then it falls right back, and we don't tell anybody because it's already there. You can't change history. If you don't repair something that you know is broken, and then when it explodes or falls off in the freeway or on the road or something, you can't, oh, man, and then you beat yourself up. I should have changed that. I should have changed that. I should have changed that. Well, that's good for a conversation, I guess, but you can't change it. History is history. You can't change it. It makes an excellent guiding post, but it's not supposed to be used as a hitching post. So you read your owner's manual, or you talk to your garage, or you listen to this radio program. If you got questions, by the way, we do have a phone here. And you can go 520-719-1490, and we'll take tech questions. We'll take any question you want, automobile, you know. But you need to ask somebody. And, you know, like guys used to tell me, Simmons, you don't need to work on your cell phone. Don't quit your day job. Don't worry. I'm not going to work on the cell phone. I mean, don't work on your computer in your car. Don't reset. Don't unplug. Don't take the battery cable off and then erase all of the codes that's inside your car computer, so that when we look at it, there's nothing there, and we go, oh, no. Now we've got a mess trying to figure out what in the world did the computer see, and all it does is slow down your diag time. And then, hey, that's on you. If you bring it in, we're tracking this thing. It may be an intermittent problem. We have no idea. If you clear those things, and that's tech, there isn't a tech on the market that will tell you, oh, by the way, if a light comes on, just go ahead and put a disconnect the battery cable. I will tell you, if you don't like that light on, instead of taking that battery cable off, because eventually you're going to have it fixed, put a piece of tape over it if you don't like that light. Get you a piece of tape, a little blue tape that you can buy at any hardware store, and put it right over the light if that's the way you want to live. But when that thing quits or that thing explodes, then you can say, oh, that must be an idiot light. That's exactly what it is. we used to have them on the older cars for you youngsters out there. And it was, oh, remember that, Jim? The oil pressure light comes on when you blow your motor up?
Yeah. Well, just before, you know, and it was, you know, we used to always say, you know, the idiot light came on. Well, quit being an idiot, because it just told you you were one. That light doesn't come
That's
on
right.
because you were smart. That light came on because you were an idiot. That's why it's an idiot light. Because when the
right.
when the old days, when the oil pressure light came on, it's all over. It's all over but the crying.
Yep.
You know, that thing pops
yep.
on, what, like 5-6 PSI, Jerry? Just enough time to tell you that, hey, you ran out of oil. So,
well,
you know, cars...
It takes oil pressure. It takes the oil. People, the oil, believe it or not, it is part of the cooling system on that engine. It picks
Absolutely.
Up heat. It goes down. It circulates down through the block. It goes to the oil pan. The oil pan is, you can have them with fancy coolers in the oil pan. And that's part. That's taking the oil out. If the oil is dirty and foamy, it retains. Those foams go down in the pan. It does not break and circulates right back up there and retains the heat inside the bubbles. That's the reason. That's one of the reasons that you change your oil. You give that thing a fighting chance to get everything working like it's supposed to. So, it's amazing. Everything's tied together on the car. Everything's tied together. And people, if you don't think that it'll go south when you ignore it. My dad, hey, I'm telling you, my dad just said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I told him, and this, I even did an ad, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I told my dad, then you take out an insurance policy for that engine, a death insurance policy, because when it goes, you're not going to be able to afford to fix it. It's going to cost more than replacing the car. I was around long enough, and he ignored me long enough where I actually seen it happen on the Buick. Took it out. Cost him money. He gave the car away. That's how much it costs to get it fixed. He just gave the car away. So this is real. If you want to protect probably the second biggest investment you got, you need to take care of it. Okay, Jim, you have Mr. Test First Don't Guess, I think, is going to join you right after 7 o'clock hour. I'm going to take my headset, but I got to go to the airport and drop my brother off so he can get back on his smoker, go back to Tennessee. And so I'm going to try to listen to you. Maybe I don't know how it's going to respond, but it's in a diesel. And if you guys can hear me make a cup of coffee, can you imagine what it's going to sound like? You got about a minute. You got about a minute left. So, Jim, I'm gonna get out. You can pick it up and close it, and I'll be listening to you, buddy.
All right, no problem, Jerry. Drive safe to the airport. Tell your brother thanks for coming down here and enjoying our weather. So.
Yeah.
It's a great day.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we're wrapping it up for this hour. We'll be back in a couple minutes to start it all over again. Stick with us. We'll be back in just about 2 minutes. See you back right then, folks.